Hello and welcome to Developing Perspective. Developing Perspective is a podcast discussing news of note in iOS development, Apple, and the like. I'm your host, David Smith. I'm an independent iOS and Mac developer based in Herndon, Virginia. This is show number 112, and today is Friday, March 8th, 2013. Developing Perspective is never longer than 15 minutes, so let's get started. So, all right, so today I'm going to be talking about servers. I'm going to be talking about the server infrastructure that I use, why I use it, and some of the lessons and things I've learned there. But before I get into my actual setup, I just want to respond to yesterday I mentioned online that I was, you know, going through this process of, you know, building up and establishing my server infrastructure for the My Recipe Book Sync, I guess, infrastructure that I'm about getting ready to roll out in the next couple weeks. I got a couple of questions like, oh, how do you do that? Oh, what does that look like? And, you know, make a great blog post. And I just wanted to say and sort of explain why I never blog about that kind of thing or why I never put out the exact details of exactly how I do it. And the simplest version of that is that anytime you do anything that is a specific prescriptive sort of how-to, something technologically based, the moment you hit publish, it's already out of date. It's already got all kinds, you know, things are just always changing. There's, you know, there's lots of components, there's lots of things going into it. And then every time you publish it, it's just going to keep getting more and more out of date. And that's the first part. And then the second part is that everybody's needs are slightly different. And as a result, there's always these little nuances and tweaks and changes and things that people will do that then cause problems or incompatibilities or questions that, you know, the logical thing is if I'm putting out a guide and saying, hey, this is a way to do something, that there's a certain implied warranty that I'm doing with that and a certain obligation, not strictly, but an implied obligation that I would help people who sort of navigate that process. And that's just a tremendous amount of load and complication that just isn't something that I can take on. So that's why I never kind of really get into the weeds of how I do things technically. Similarly to why I don't publish a lot of, you know, coding how-tos or things, because the problem is if you put that out there and you say, hey, this is a cool thing that I did to learn whatever, now all of a sudden there's this there's a lot of weight that gets carried along with that. Rather than talking at a high level, and this is what I love about doing a podcast, is I can talk at a high level about something, give you pointers, give you direction, and hopefully that's helpful. And then, as you know, you can go in your own direction and sort of be more self-sufficient in that way. And obviously, there's an exception for something like an open source project or something where there's a bit more stability about it. But just for something like more lightweight, this is how I do it, it doesn't work quite as well. The one that line of things, I did want to mention something that I've had a lot of people talk, oh, you know, I'm a bit nervous getting into the server side. I don't know exactly what to do. You know, can you making recommendations? And a timely one is Railscasts, which is by Ryan Bates, and it is a amazing resource. It's basically a series of screencast tutorials about Rails. And obviously, if you're not interested in Ruby and Rails kind of thing, it may not be quite your cup of tea. But if you've ever wanted to get into that kind of thing, he is very clear. He's very straightforward. And he's just a legend. Like, I mean, he is very good at explaining something in a way that makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of kind of how-tos in there that he has the benefit of that's what his profession is, so he has the ability to go back and revise and update them. And there's also a comment section attached to each of his tutorials, which often has a lot of great feedback, where if someone has a problem and then finds a solution, they'll often post it into the comments. And so often, you know, I'm working on a particular infrastructure or something. If I go into the comments about the place that sort of sourced the idea, there's almost always a solution to the problem that I'm running into, which is great. And I highly recommend that. There'll be a link in the show notes, but it's just railscasts.com. And that's actually where I got the idea for what I'm going to talk about for the rest of the show, which is kind of how where I've been heading in terms of setting up for server infrastructure and how I manage that. So right now, and this is just sort of the way what I feel comfortable with. It doesn't work for everybody. There's a lot of different options and a lot of choices. But right now, I do almost all my hosting on Linode, which is a virtual private server provider. They do basically you're leasing virtual Linux boxes by the – I don't even know. They price monthly, but you can come in and out however you want. Basically, you know, it means that I have virtual servers that are, in my experience, very, very reliable and very performant, or at least performant enough for what I want, and are just kind of work really well. They've actually been doing some recent updates that make them even better and make their pricing even more competitive. That's kind of how I do it. And a typical sort of setup that I have for them is that I have an application load balancer in the front, which Linode provides a service called Node Balancer, which is just a $20 a month add-on that you can put in front of your your boxes that will do load balancing for you, which is nice and convenient, and in my experience has been working really well. Behind that, I put a series of web servers running. Right now I'm running Nginx and Unicorn, which as kind of my front end and Rails processor, whatever you call it. And then in the back, I have a database, which is right now Postgres or Postgres or whatever you want to call it, running in the back. And so that's, very straightforward, classic web hierarchy. A load balancer in the front, you kind of have that diamond. The load balancer in the front spans out to, N web services based on the load, and then come down again into the database in the back. And the reason I use that infrastructure on Linode is it's very, very cost effective. And for the kind of load that I'm trying to manage, it works out to be very, very, very cost effective in that something like Heroku or one of the other kind of more elastic providers where there's an expectation of that you can sort of go easily and to some degree you can kind of turn up the scale yourself. That works well if that's something that you're really worried about. If you're really worried about sort of whatever the hockey stick turn on your app or your service, where all of a sudden you're going to need to be handling 100,000 times more users than you did the day before, that potentially is useful. The nature of what I do, all the people who use my web services for the most part have already given me some amount of money. And so that limits dramatically the growth that I can have. In a kind of a weird way, that's a good thing, that there's a limit to the number of people in the world who are willing to give me a dollar every day. And so I don't have to worry too much about these kind of crazy spikes in growth. That being said, you want to have an infrastructure and a setup in place that allows you to scale as you need to. And this infrastructure is fairly flexible for that. And this is something that I'm going to be talking for the latter part of the thing is you need to get very good at the provisioning process for new servers and to be able to grow and collapse your needs as they sort of change. And it's something that you get very good at. And so that's kind of the process that I've been working on, and this is all actually got started from, there's a Rails cast called Capistrano Recipes, which I'll have a link to in the show notes, where Ryan talked about how he does this, and it was something that once I saw was just an answer to exactly what I've been looking for. And basically all you do is you have a series of scripts for provisioning a fresh Linux installation to exactly what you want. You can do this with Chef, Puppet, there's all kinds of other variations on that people use. But for someone like me who's not a system administrator, who doesn't do a lot of this, most of what I do is I set up a basic infrastructure, I put it out there, and it just kind of runs on its own for a while. That works fine. And I'm talking about systems with not crazy numbers of users, numbers of users that are measured in thousands. But for some of the apps, it's hundreds of thousands. For some of the others, it's tens of thousands. But that kind of load, I'm not going to go crazy in terms of building these super scalable infrastructures. I want something very pragmatic, very simple, and very repeatable for myself. And so this is what I've been doing for the last couple of days, is I've been sitting there actually just consciously practicing tearing down and rebuilding servers over and over again. And this is sort of the lesson, the takeaway for today that I wanted to mention, is that you want to be able, before you ever launch something, you want to practice the worst case. You want to practice and get good at what the bad case for that could be. And so in this case, it's what happens if something goes bad with one of my machines. One of my things gets hacked. One of my the machines that are physically running on has a problem. I need to spin something up new. You don't want to learn the process of how to deal with that at that time. You want to be practiced and skilled in doing that ahead of time. And so what I just spent all of basically yesterday doing is I just went into Linode and I'd say rebuild this machine, fresh install, go through and run work through my workflow for setting it up and getting it provisioned. And I got to a point where it's basically from start to finish, from an empty machine to a running web server, which is the one that I focus on mostly, is about 10 minutes for me. And most of that time is just watching, scripts fly by and doing things. But that process and being very, confident in that is something that allows me to use something like Linode. If that's something that's scary to you, you maybe need to use something that's more managed, something that's more like a Heroku where they're doing most of that for you. And understanding that as a result, you're paying for that. You're paying for that extra that extra hand-holding and abilities that they're kind of laying on top of your infrastructure. So that's kind of what I do. And it's you can apply that to a lot of things. You also want to play around with load testing. You want to, a great tool for that is something called Apache Benchmark, or AB, you'll see it often called, which you can just get for any platform you could imagine. And it's just a really simple tool. All it does is you say, I want you to make 1,000 web requests, or I want to make you 10,000 web requests with a certain amount of concurrency. So I want you to make 1,000 web requests 10 at a time. And lets you kind of see how your web service responds to that, and lets you kind of ramp up the volume in a way that is often a bit tricky to do otherwise. And it works really well. It's something that helps me kind of identify little bottlenecks or little issues in my web servers and in a way that it would be trickier to do without actual load. Obviously, once you have real users, using a tool like that is a little funny because you don't necessarily – you can only do it for a new infrastructure. You wouldn't want to put undue load on your production environment when users are actually using it. But it's kind of a strange topic for today, but I thought I wanted to kind of just work through kind of, I get a lot of questions about how and why I want to use servers. And a lot of people get too wrapped up into all the, I don't even know if it's like a religious debate, but it's like there's a lot of different choices you can make. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter which infrastructure you use. If you're a PHP guy, if you're a Python guy, if you're a Ruby guy, if you're doing JSP or ASP or any of these infrastructures, at this point, the maturity of web stacks, functionally, they're not going to make much difference. And I mean that mostly from like your end user isn't going to notice a difference really if you're using one or the other. What's important to the user is reliability and stability and performance. And those things are something that is more on you for developing the skills that you need to manage whatever stack you're using and to understand the intricacies of it. And I always find that the thing that's dangerous with a tool like Heroku, which is great in that it's super easy and flexible, is that you can – it's a very leaky abstraction, maybe is the best way to say it, where it hides so much from you that you can kind of start ignoring some of this. You can start ignoring some of the complexity of what you're doing. And then at some point, that complexity can sort of jump out and bite you in a way that you may not understand what's going on or may not know how to fix it. You know, you'll have some strange conflict or you'll have some weird caching thing that's going on that's sort of at levels deeper than you can access or levels that you're not really aware of. And that can cause really weird problems. And that's something that may not happen every time. It won't happen often. Maybe it won't even happen at all. But it's a danger that I like to have an infrastructure that I really understand, that I know what's going on all the way from from when the request is made, all the way down to what OS that machine's running, all those kinds of things. So that's why I use the infrastructure that I do. Learning Linux and learning to administer Linux is, I think, it's one of those skills. If you don't know how to do that, if you're not comfortable in a terminal SSHing into a machine, you really need to. And I say that not necessarily as if you're a developer, you may never actually have a practical need to, but it's something that if you are uncomfortable with, you're probably missing out in terms of your ability to be to respond in a variety of circumstances. And it's not that hard at the end of the day. You know, it's like getting comfortable with all the various tools and what that looks like in a Linux machine. You can spin up one on Linode for $20 a month and play with it. Or there's even like Vagrant or a virtual PC or Parallels, I think, can even just run a Linux server locally and you can just play with it. And it's just something that I would encourage a lot of you to do because I think you're a better developer the deeper into the stack you have knowledge, whether or not you end up needing to use that knowledge. And basically, yeah, so that's how I do it. That's something that I'm looking forward to rolling out. And I think it's a good exercise to go through. And it's something that you, even if you only are focused on the front end, understanding how backends work is useful. All right, that's it for today's show. As always, if you have questions, comments, concerns, or complaints, I'm on Twitter @_DavidSmith. I'm on AppNet @DavidSmith. And if you want to email me, if you have a question about the show or something like that, I'm David@DevelopingPerspective.com. All right. Hope you have a great weekend. Happy coding. And I'll talk to you next week. Bye.